This is Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, July 22nd, kind of our calm before the storm podcast with less than 2 weeks before Notre Dame hits the field in Culver for the start of 2019 preseason practice. I'm Tim Priester with Pete Sampson today, two-man booth. And we want to start with a story, Pete, that you wrote on The Athletic that a lot of people commented on. I commented on to you because I thought it wasn't anything that I had actually been aware of, and it's really a great story where Notre Dame and Clemson getting together off the field just to share ideas of how each other runs the program. And when I read the story, it's like, you know what, that makes sense. Why wouldn't people do that? But on the surface, you can understand why no one would expect Notre Dame and Clemson, having participated against one another in a bowl game, actually getting together and sharing notes.
Yeah, especially with Clemson coming on the schedule next year, too, in 2020. But, yeah, it was something that it dropped on my radar. I was interviewing Jack Swarbrick maybe a month ago,
yeah.
And he just casually mentioned that, you know, Clemson came up here and they shared ideas. I'm like, what? So then we talked about it a little bit. I talked to a couple, Aaron Carney and Dave Polokin in the recruiting office at Notre Dame, and did some research into Clemson through sort of their operations side of things. And it felt like a very enlightened approach to college football in 2019 that, you know, not everything is a trade secret. We don't have to like live in silos and pretend that nobody else knows anything. Cause I mean, there are so many, even though Clemson and Notre Dame is not one of those instances, pretty much everybody knows somebody on everybody else's staff. I thought the mutual respect angle was kind of interesting that Clemson and Notre Dame, not necessarily that they like each other, but they certainly have some respect for one another. The fact that I think Clemson sort of sees fit and the importance of finding that at a level maybe not as high as Notre Dame, but like it's probably more than 90% of other schools. So even though they're certainly not the same program, they have more similarities than I think people would see on the surface.
It doesn't surprise me that Dabo Swinney would be the type of guy that would be open-minded enough to do something like this.
And that was kind of one of the things that was interesting talking to people around Clemson on background about it, that so they hired this guy named his name is Thad Turnipseed, and he's Dabo's right hand man. Went to Alabama, and Dabo hired him, I believe, in 2013. And basically, his job is make Clemson football better. And as they were building sort of their huge facility, he went out and visited about 30 different schools to see, okay, what are your best practices? What are you doing that works? What do you like in your facilities? And then take everything that they really liked and put it in one building. Since they've done that, there have been about 30 schools that have visited Clemson to see, okay, how did this all come together? What does it look like? And Dabo, apparently his approach is not only does he want to make Clemson football as good as he possibly can, he would like the game of college football to be as good as it possibly can be. And if there's something Clemson is doing that is, you know, whether it's academics related or probably more so like sports science recovery related, they want players at Notre Dame to have that. They want players at Washington to have that. They want players at Iowa State to have that.
Good for college football.
Yeah, it's good for college football. And I think you sort of see there's a little bit more of a, I don't know, sort of spreading the good word of college football around the country. I thought it was just kind of interesting, good give and take between the two schools.
At a time when there's talk about, I think Pat Fitzgerald was addressing, less fans coming to games, staying home, watching it on TV, which, you know, now is a fairly magnificent presentation morning, noon, and night. So I get that part of it. One of the questions I know one of our subscribers had was about the use of the private jet. You wrote about that for assistant coaches. And the question, I guess, to you is Notre Dame going to do that more with assistant coaches on the recruiting trail?
I know that both Notre Dame's coordinators, Chip Long and Clark Lee, would love it if that happened. And I think their perspective, I'm talking about Long and Lee, their perspective, it's less about traveling in comfort and style and all that. And like, it's more about if I can see double the number of kids, if I can be that, increase my efficiency by 100%, that's something we should do, to the point that, like, look, if I have to fly coach on the way home after I'm done, that's fine. But give it to me on the front end so I can get my work done, and then I can head back.
I would think, and it was a great question, and I would think that should be a gimme for Notre Dame.
Right.
Come on.
It's one of those things, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, because there are definitely other elements around Notre Dame where you can be a leader in the sport in investment, in money spent, in resources invested, without being less Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
A water slide in your football facility is not one of those things. An athlete-only dorm is not one of those things. But the best possible sports science recovery space is one of those things. Or, the new football facility, I think, is perfectly Notre Dame, where it's highly, highly functional without a whole – and it looks very, very nice as you drive by it, but it doesn't have, like, the bells and whistles mm-hmm. the way that, an LSU locker room. I don't know if you saw that this morning.
I did.
Where they put that out. It looks like a first-class cabin in a 747. The plane travel, is one of those things where, look, you can be more efficient. You have the money to do it, and it's not something where you're rubbing the rest of the university's face
right,
in the sort of largesse of football investment.
Right. Good stuff. For those that haven't seen it, check it out on The Athletic by Pete Sampson. I wanted to move on to some of a couple of the interviews that I did here within the last week with Clark Lee and Chip Long. And I had a story earlier, and I've just tried to kind of spread out this information leading into the start of camp. But Clark Lee had made the comment that the athleticism of the linebackers he's coaching is as talented, it's a group as talented as he's coached. Now, a lot of people misinterpreted that as saying, and he made the comparison to 2017 and said athletically we're way ahead of where we were in 2017. A lot of people took that as another shot at Drew Tranquil not being a quality athlete, and that was not the point. The point was Drew Tranquil is playing Rover, but he really was a buck. Niles Morgan was a starting Mike linebacker, good, solid Mike linebacker, but, not a sideline-to-sideline guy. So, the point is, and he's not saying that this group is going to be better than the 2017 group was. He's not saying that at all. He's just saying athletically, this is what they have. Guys like Jack Lamb, Owusu Koromoa included in that group, of course, and Shane Simon. Asmar Bilal's in there too. Even Asmar Bilal is a more athletic Mike. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say more athletic than Coney, but I'm sure that if you timed them both in the 40.
Yeah.
Bilal would run a better 40.
Yeah, I think more athletic, you can say that.
Yeah, I guess you can.
More instinctual? No way.
No, definitely not.
And I think that Clark Lee's commentary, we sort of view it and fans sort of view it as like, well, the starting lineup. And that's not what he's talking about necessarily. He's also talking about the twos and the
absolutely.
Threes. Because I think that if you got these coaches alone, they would tell you when they showed up in 2017, when they looked at the twos and the threes, they were just like, What is this? This is Notre Dame. So they have not had a starting linebacker talent problems the last 2 years at all. But I do think that the coaching staff is much more optimistic about the talent behind the starters, even if the starters they're not going to be as good as last year. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be as close to as good as last year, but the twos should be better. And I think that they will be much more reliable in a way that they haven't been able to employ the linebackers
that
way before.
Well, the twos now have been in the program and or have played the position, generally speaking.
And
were recruited to play for – which is where Owusu Koromoa, that's a point that Clark Lee made. This is the guy – this is the first guy that we recruited specifically to play that position. He also spoke – I also had a story on the defensive tackles. There's a question in segment two that I'll save that for. But Chip Long, I recently also did a story with Chip Long talking about the utilization of the running backs in the passing game, and that was something we know they wanted to do last year, but they couldn't keep – before Dexter Williams was eligible, and even he got better as a pass receiver, he couldn't keep Jafar Armstrong and Tony Jones Jr. healthy, and those two are potentially outstanding receivers as running backs. And it really – if you could keep those two guys healthy – and he doesn't like substituting within the same series because it slows things down for the defense. But if you can get those two guys on the field, you can do so much with them. And it really would open up an aspect of their offense, not an extension of the running game.
No, but it's okay when Ian Book is your quarterback because he's completing those passes at a 90% clip.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm very bullish on Jafar Armstrong in this capacity as a receiver, like a real slash type player. And it's not like he's like Chris Tyree is not somebody you're going to ever give the ball to probably 20-25 times in a game. Jafar Armstrong is built to actually take a pounding. He was banged up a lot last year, but I'm confident that he can sort of be a little bit more CJ ProSize like in terms of a bigger
That's
athlete.
A good...
Probably tougher than ProSize was in terms of being able to like initiate contact. But I like the idea. I think the backs are suited for it. Jafar Armstrong is more suited for it than Josh Adams or Dexter Williams ever was.
Yeah.
And they have a quarterback who's more suited for it as well.
It's hard to believe, and this is mainly because of injury and then just competition, that Tony Jones only has 12 receptions in 2 years, whereas Jafar Armstrong, I think, had 14 catches for over 150 yards.
That is surprising.
He had to, yeah, I mean, I think it was just, getting banged up and then not being able to beat out the guys that were ahead of him. But Chip Long, very encouraged by Tony Jones Jr. during the offseason ever since the spring. So we'll see how that develops. A couple more things in this segment, Pete. Colin Gamble, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see him, the little nickel that Notre Dame is now recruiting. He is little, but, man, the kid is lightning fast out of his break. I know he's rated very low. 24/7 Sports has him at 1,100 and something. But he can play. If you're recruiting him as a nickel, that's your successor to Sean Crawford. Somebody said, I thought KJ Wallace was a successor. Well,
you can have more than one.
You have to have. I mean, we saw what happened to Crawford, and they're all little guys, so they're a little bit more susceptible to getting banged up. But I don't know if you've had a chance to see him.
I have not. I've read some of the reviews of him and sort of his take on the offer. And then, I believe there was a story that claimed he ran in the 4.3s. And I'm like, all right, you're telling me a guy who's ranked outside the top 1,000 prospects runs a 4.3. Okay. Notre Dame's defensive back recruiting is not in an awesome spot right now. They need to take some chances on guys just to fill out this class. And no pun intended. Maybe a bit of a gamble with this kid from Texas.
It might be. And does he run a 4.36? I don't believe that he does. I will say this. I think his 10-yard time is upper echelon. And as a nickelback, that is exactly what you need. He closes out of the back pedal. He closes so well on the ball. Now, he's very small. There's no doubt about that. He's listed at 5'10". There's no way. He's listed at, I think, 170.
You're saying he's more like a 5'8", 160?
I think he's more in the 5'8", to 5'9", range and 160, 165, yeah. But, I mean, isn't that what Crawford was?
Crawford was very tiny. Coming out of high school, he was also a top 100 player.
True.
And I think watching, were you at the Irish Invasion camp when Crawford was there and he competed?
I was not, no.
I saw him then. I don't know if I saw him at another camp, but talking to people who sort of watched him throughout, just a ferocious competitor every time out. And I'm not saying Colin Gamble is not, nor can I say Colin Gamble is. I haven't seen him in those settings before where you can see like how hard he gets after it. I just know that Sean Crawford did. And that, to me, that was the break on the ball, the sort of ability to be competitive, like when the ball's in the air, all that was great. But I thought that Crawford's best attribute was his compete level. And I just don't have a read on Colin Gamble that way.
I think Gamble's compete level is pretty high too. So we'll see what Notre Dame, we'll see what he thinks. We'll see what Notre Dame ultimately does. But I think if you're recruiting him as a nickel, I think that's a very good fit. Last thing in this segment, and you tweeted out the other day, I think it was Friday, and I could have sworn it was like you were dangling a carrot in front of my face to get me to react to Jarrett.
It was Friday.
It was Jarrett Patterson being named to the preseason Remington Award watch list. and he's never snapped a football in college. And look, everybody's impressed by Jarrett Patterson. And I swear I was not going, this would have been the last 2 years on Thursday Thoughts, I've commented on the preseason Remington Award and made fun of it. And I wasn't going to comment this year. And then they put Jarrett Patterson on and he's never
pulled
never
me right
snapped.
Back in Remington. I mean, the Remington Award list, I'm assuming it's basically like a Google document that's shared by all sports information directors, and they just enter their names.
That's why I've written in the past that it's like, okay, who are the returning starting centers? Let's put them on the preseason list.
I'll put it this way. What makes more sense to you in the end? Jarrett Patterson on the Remington Award watch list or Jafar Armstrong and Tony Jones on the Doak Walker Award watch list? I mean, seriously.
How big is the list?
By the end of the year, I think make a pretty good argument that Jarrett Patterson will rank higher among centers nationally than Jafar and Tony will among running backs nationally.
You're probably correct because Patterson's a no doubt about it starter, and Armstrong, even if he's the lead guy, is going to share. They want to keep him healthy, so he probably he won't get as many snaps obviously as Notre Dame's starting center. It doesn't matter what's more ridiculous than the other.
It's a sure sign the offseason needs to come to an end. Let's get into watch list talk.
You know that we're really, really close to the start of preseason practice when we start, when the Remington Award watch list and many others come out. I'm not a big guy on just in general, it's about as meaningless as anything you can possibly do in the preseason. But, I tried, Pete. I tried to stay away from him, but I couldn't. We'll be back. Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Segment two, Burning Up the Boards, brought to you by Rent Like a Champion, South Bend's largest vacation rental company with 1,000 weekend home rentals close to Notre Dame Stadium available for Fighting Irish game days. Irish Illustrated readers and listeners can get $100 off their booking with the promo code IRISH2019. Our first question comes from Irish Math. Does Michael Young have the speed to be a true deep threat opposing defenses must account for?
Some opposing defenses. Does Georgia have to account for Michael Young? I'd say probably not. Does Boston College? Probably. I think that he's a player that is going to keep most defenses honest, but I'm not sure I would put him as somebody who's going to, give Clemson or Georgia or Alabama problems.
Yeah, he's not Will Fuller.
Right.
I mean, he's speedy, but he's
everybody
not
had
elite.
To account for Will Fuller.
Right, right. I think the main thing is be consistent, catch the football consistently, stay healthy, be a threat opposite Claypool and your Cole Kmet, your tight end. I don't know. I mean, he's an interesting guy. His name's going to come up again for me anyway on a question coming up here in a little bit, but Michael Young had a very good spring. Is he an elite burner? Probably not, but he's an upper echelon guy.
Wash ND, what is more likely, Ian Book throwing for 3,500 yards or Jafar Armstrong getting 1,500 yards receiving / rushing?
Yeah, that's my edit mistake there. Sorry. 3,500 yards, man, that's a lot. That's a lot with an offensive coordinator that likes to run the football. It's not last year, It's not, a really young and inexperienced offensive line. You want to take advantage of that more. Chip Long's a guy that likes the balance. Then again, Jafar Armstrong, picturing him staying healthy all year. If he can stay healthy all year, yeah, I certainly think. I mean, I think he's a 24 catch guy.
I think the answer is sort of like if the first one happens, the second one definitely will happen as well. Because if Ian Book throws for 3,500 yards, Jafar Armstrong is probably going to account for 500 of them.
He probably will.
Just for historical context, 3,500 yards passing at Notre Dame has happened twice, Brady Quinn's junior year and Jimmy Clausen's junior year. That's it. Would not shock me if Book hit 3,500, though. I think his accuracy and sort of the all fields throws that he can make, there's a decent chance of that happening.
There was actually, I'm gonna pop down to another question here, Pete. It's at Jay Reedy at 56. Y'all seem very bullish on Ian Book to take a big leap this year. What are the reasons behind that, and what targets for the season are realistic? A, completion percentage, B, yards, and C, touchdowns. We've already addressed the yards, but I mean, why are you bullish on Ian Book?
I spent some time with him on Friday for a couple of stories I was working on. One, he's pretty jacked up. Like, he does not look like the kid that we were interviewing 2 years ago,
right,
as a backup who, you know, played against LSU. He's definitely sort of hit a level of physical maturity. I also think that he spent his offseason like a professional football player would, in terms of the work he put in. I thought the Manning Passing Academy stuff is really interesting. I talked to him about that. And I mean, he came out of that, spent a lot of time with Trevor Lawrence, Jake Fromm, KJ Costello, and he sees himself as peers to those players. And if you feel like you are as good as everyone else in the country, then I think there's a pretty good chance with Chip Long, returning experience, good group of receivers, good offensive line. An offense that's probably going to need to score a lot of points because the defense is not going to be as good as it was a year ago. That statistically, its completion percentage probably will be about the same, which was the best in Notre Dame history. But I think deep shot type stuff, I talked to him about that. He felt like it's not an arm strength issue as much as like his footwork, his base, angles.
I was going to say maybe release point.
Yeah,
on deep
getting
ball.
Rid of the ball earlier.
Yep.
I did sort of a film review with him, and one of the plays we talked about was the Fink touchdown at USC last year, right at the end of the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I flipped that on, he's like, I should have thrown this earlier. Like, I was way late on this throw, and if I'm as early as I should be, it's a very easy pitch and catch type throw. So I think that you'll see him see the deep ball come open earlier because he's processing things better.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see things more clearly, then I think your statistics will rise. And that doesn't have a damn thing to do with like throwing the ball harder. It's just being smarter with where the ball is going.
Yeah, completion percentage. I mean, he's all things being equal, he's a 70 to 75% guy. But I agree with you. He's going to take more shots downfield, but if he has those two healthy running backs, those are going to be easier throws for him too. So I don't know where that all ends up, where it shakes out, but we know he's a very accurate guy. I had said last week 30 touchdowns, and that's a big number. I don't know if it goes quite that high. Certainly 25. I don't know where your thinking is on that.
This would be a good over under bet, but
yeah.
If you said
somewhere in between those two numbers, I think
28.5, I would be inclined to bet the over on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's going to have a really productive year throwing the ball, yards, completion, and touchdowns.
Yeah. Last question on Ian Book from Denver Maximus. Big things are expected of Ian Book this fall. Is it safe to say as Book goes, so goes the season? How confident are you should an injury befall Book? Any idea how Djurkovic and Clark are doing this offseason?
Not confident would be the second I answer. I don't know Phil Djurkovic, Brendan Clark, where they are. Phil Djurkovic needs to, he will be very closely watched at Culver and every other time we get to see him, because he really struggled in the blue gold game. So that's a confidence issue, I think, as much as anything for him. Brendan Clark is a freshman. I would never be confident with a freshman coming into the game unless it's Trevor Lawrence, and Brendan Clark is not Trevor Lawrence. So it's tough. If Ian Book goes down, so goes the season.
Yeah.
Does Ian Book need to throw for 3,500 yards and 30
that's
touchdowns?
A good way to put it.
Probably not. Yeah. But if he does, I think that's a really good sign.
I found it interesting. I don't think that I've used this quote from Chip Long yet, but I asked him about Djurkovic and his mechanics and throwing and motion and what have you, and he said that they never asked him to change his throwing mechanics. And I said, really? I find that really interesting because he tightened him up in the spring. He was much more over the top and compact. He didn't always look comfortable doing that. So it'd be very interesting to see exactly where they are when camp opens in less than 2 weeks. But he just has to be more accurate. And the whole thing with Chip Long is that, it's a muscle memory thing. What you recruit when it comes to the throwing motion of a quarterback, not his feet. They'll work on his feet and adjusting the feet, as Ian Book addressed with you. But the actual throwing motion of the arm, they don't want to change it. So I'll be interested to see where he is with that. I've heard good things about Brendan Clark. He is a very tight, compact, over-the-top thrower. And so for him, you know, those 15, 17 stop routes are easy for him to hit. So that doesn't mean he'll be in a better position than Jurkovec should something happen to Book. But he has thrown the ball pretty well this summer.
SR5452, does the interior defensive line depth concern you guys?
It was the story that I referenced in segment one about defensive tackles and Clark Lee's comments about them. I mean, how many guys do you need? We know the four.
Four healthy.
You need four healthy.
And healthy is the big.
Yeah, and I don't expect Hunter Spears to be a contributor this year. But I mean, Jamin Franklin is ready to go. I'm sure he's spent a lot of time making up ground strength wise. That's your third nose tackle, and then you know the reviews on Howard Cross continue to be very, very good. So now we're looking at three techniques and three nose tackles plus Hunter Spears. If there's some attrition there, I get that. You're hoping to avoid the attrition with MTA and Heinisch and Lacey and Jason Adamiola. But, you know, I just, until something else happens there now, I think they're pretty well positioned moving forward. How do you feel about it?
I think it's a concern. And I think I get Clark Lee's perspective that he's not concerned about it today. But as soon as someone tears an MCL, you know, and it's the nature of the position that's a concern, not so much like the four guys. It's the assumption that somebody's going to suffer a long-term injury because someone always suffers a long-term injury. And who is it? If it's Kurt Heinisch, then they're in trouble. If it's MTA, then they're in trouble. And if it's Lacey or Jason Adamiola, like, I think Jamin Franklin could be a productive sort of rotational player in college. Beyond that, you're looking at freshmen.
I hear what you're saying.
Healthy throughout, they're good. And I think that's sort of the issue with Bonner. Like Bonner, I think, is a bigger loss to the staff than he is to people who read about Notre Dame football. And it wasn't that like he was this incredible player. It was that he was the line where the guy after Bonner was Mike Adu Treadway. And that was a huge drop. And I think that the guys after, I mean, we'll see about Lacey. I think he'll be good. But after that, I think there's a pretty significant drop to the next guy. They really need a good run of health at defensive tackle. And if they get one, then it's not a concern. If they don't, then it's a concern.
I'm really bullish on Howard Cross. He was a guy that I kind of stepped out on when he was a three-star and signed how much I loved him. So I've got something writing on that a little bit right now.
Clark's comment to you about, like, I like that he's short was interesting.
Yeah, because he'd have a chip like on his shoulder.
Yeah, a little bit more of a dogged attitude. So, I mean, that kind of had me a little bit intrigued when he said that in your story.
And the quote about his lower arm looks like that of a bear.
Yeah, that's also good.
Which a lot of people kind of kick out of and says a lot. And he's a long arm guy, which is huge for any offensive or defensive lineman. So we'll see. I think your points are taken, but are well taken. But, you know, we'll see moving forward. Right now, they're in a pretty good situation. At JJ Allwine, if things go sideways, could this be the worst Notre Dame punter-kicker combination since when? Should Ian Book be considered for the Ray Guy watch list based on number of expected pooch punts?
I'm going to defer to you because you did, I think, more in-depth research on kicker-punter combinations.
Well, I did, and I'd like to also refer to an O'Malley story, a recent O'Malley story about the trend where teams are going for fourth down more often. Notre Dame is one of those, and they're in a situation now where, yeah, absolutely, if you don't have confidence in your specialist that you're going to do that. The worst combination since. The first guy that came to mind was Carl Gioia. He was the kicker in 2006 when he was 8 of 13 on field goals and missed 5 extra points. But Jeff Price was the punter, and he had a 45.4-yard average. So I can't go to them. So I'd go to 2008. Brandon Walker was 14 of 24 on field goals, and Eric Most, who doubled as a baseball pitcher for the Notre Dame baseball team, averaged 40.8. I remember his hang time being good. He didn't have a whole bunch of leg, but I don't think they returned it much against him. So I think you'd have to go back to 2008 for that one.
It's yeah.
You'll take that?
I'll take that. I am also fascinated to watch extra points and punts this year in a way that's probably unhealthy.
Yeah, for example, Carl Gioia attempted only 13 field goals in 2006. That was a pretty potent offense there with Brady Quinn at the controls. So that had something to do with it. And you are in a somewhat similar situation, I would think, this year.
Next up, Stu Doggy Dog. Excluding last year's starters, please name three players that the coaching staff is most confident will make a positive impact to the team's success this year.
I would, why don't we alternate if you want to do, I would start with Owusu Koramoah.
Yeah, that's who I wanted to start with.
I think that's a guy that as confident as we are. Well, our confidence is steered by the confidence of the coaching staff in many instances, and he would be first. Who else would you throw out there?
I mean,
he's the defensive guy. I think there's an obvious offensive one.
You mentioned Michael Young earlier.
Yes.
I think that's probably who it is because he will be a starter who was not a starter last year, and they need a lot from that position. And also, I think he's going to benefit. Like, I don't think people realize how good Chris Finke actually is and how much he was, like, the number one target off on a lot of plays last year. That's just going to open up so much for Michael Young because Claypool and Finke, I think, are both going to be outstanding. So, yeah, Michael Young would be the guy on offense.
We had in our counting down the Irish, Finke was number 9. So he's in the top 10. He's not underestimated by us. Jarrett Patterson's obviously another guy that they have a tremendous amount of confidence in. in talking with Clark Lee, Jason Adamiola is a guy that he has a lot of confidence in. He thinks that MTA Adamiola duo, if not as effective as Tillery, which would be difficult. I don't think you're going to get 8 sacks from that spot. But against the run, they should be pretty good there. Those would be the guys that I would throw out there. And then kind of a follow-up to that question from @Wilmus155, which unproven players you think will emerge or surprise us here? Any predictions based on gut or intel from the summer?
I think Owusu Koramoah is going to be the guy. I mean, you talk to people around the staff, and they're just outright bullish about him. And I think some of it has to do with, like, he's recruited for the position and all that, but I think a lot of it has to do with, like, he's just athletically, he's superior to a lot of other guys that they have. There's some unique DNA at work there.
Yeah.
So that's my guy.
Yeah, of course, Jacob Lacy. I mean, he's in. Yeah. He was number 2 by default, but I think he kind of earned the number 2 during the spring. Jack Lamb certainly is a guy that they're very high on and may end up being. He's certainly going to be the guy on passing downs at Buck linebacker and may end up being the full-time starter, depending upon what Jim Markeith can do. And then I'd go back to Howard Cross. I think that he's a guy that's impressed them.
I'd love to hear a corner's name be mentioned in our conversations around the Goog, and I'm yet to really hear one, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess Tariq Bracey would be the guy that you hope to hear, right, that he's made the strides that he needs to make physically, because athletically and just, you know, ball skills, he has those. So, hopefully for Notre Dame, that's something that we hear more in August.
Mason Plummer 6, over under 7 touchdowns for Chase Claypool this season.
I think over. I mean, he's got Ian Book. If he has Ian Book with him all 13 games, I think he's a double-digit guy. Just by having Book, you know, you had Boykin with 8, and he didn't get Book until game 4.
Right. Yeah, it was almost, and only had Book for 9 of the 13
right,
games
right.
Total.
So right.
And
so,
Clemson doesn't count either.
I mean, I think I think Claypool, I don't know necessarily easily, but I think that he can be a double digit touchdown
guy.
Yeah,
I would bet over on that. I think that's I don't know what the over under where you would create equal action on both sides, but you know, it might be 9.5 or 10.5. Seven just seems too low for a line. But yeah, double digits is totally within the realm of possibility.
At Ryan Aronofsky, who becomes a head coach first, Chip Long or Clark Lee?
I think it's definitely going to be Chip Long, which I may regret saying definitely, but teams want to hire offense. Chip Long is offense. And Notre Dame's offense is, I think, creative. And Chip Long also has a jump on Clark Lee in terms of how long he's been a coordinator.
Yes.
So those would be the reasons.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think when Clark Lee gets to the point where he starts interviewing for head coaching jobs, I think he's going to be very, very impressive. He's a bit understated, very cerebral. I have no doubt that he will impress people in those interview situations. But I agree with you, Chip Long has the jump, and we live in an offensive world. And if their offense is as effective as we expect it to be this year, it could happen at that point.
I'm really curious to see what jobs both these guys start to interview for. And I think it's worth keeping in mind that if you're a coordinator who's looking to be a head coach, that let's just say Eastern Michigan came over and we hear Clark Lee is interviewed for Eastern Michigan. From Clark Lee's perspective, I think that's more of a let's start the interview process for Vanderbilt
or Syracuse
down the road. But I guess I asked this, I'm curious, like, what level of job would make these guys move? Is it just a Power 5 job, or would they move to a Group of 5 position? And I don't really know the answer to that.
I think
Chip is Power 5.
I think it is too, but if, for example, the Memphis job opened up where he came from, I think that would be one that he might take. I think both are kind of in that mindset that, okay, we're trending in the right direction here, that we don't have to jump at that. You know,
They like it here.
Yeah, right. Some of those Mac jobs are coach killers, man. I mean,
yeah,
it's just and they're too high profile and trending up to take a chance like that.
TDISU 19, taking into consideration both coaching and recruiting ability, rank the assistant coaches on the staff from most valuable to most easily replaceable.
I'm a little hesitant to go
what
to list 7, 8, 9, 10 because I think that's unfair. I think.
Give me your top five coaches.
Top five. Both coordinators in Elston, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say Terry Joseph. And I think Lance Taylor will eventually be up there, but you know, we don't have a point of reference yet. So I would include, you know, Brian Polian's is a dynamic recruiter, but I would include Jeff Quinn in that, in the top five.
Yeah, I think I would go Chip Long one, because I think what he's doing is innovative. Like, in schematically, that's rare. I think it's hard to find a guy that's like ahead of the curve a little bit. Clark Lee two, really good fit. I think I would go Joseph three.
Really?
Because I just think that secondary play is so much more complicated than defensive line play. And
boy, but he doesn't make it complicated. He finds a way to uncomplicate it.
That's a real skill, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You
know, and then I'd go Elston four. I think he does a lot. I mean, he's a good position coach, but I think sort of a good number two for Brian Kelly as well. You know, the fifth spot, I mean, really you're down to Who are the real candidates here? Quinn, Polian,
Taylor,
Reese, Alexander, Light. I think you could make an argument for Reese. I don't think that I would yet. I think it's a Polian or Quinn question, right?
Unless it's Taylor, but again, I don't think that we can't include him right now.
I mean, I think I would. You know, Polian is my answer because it's a question about replaceability. And I think having a guy who actually understands what Notre Dame is about and appreciates it and kind of defends it in recruiting discussions is important. Not that Jeff Quinn is like a bad coach or a bad recruiter, because I think he's a good coach and a better than good recruiter.
I can't include Polian in the top five because his special teams are too inconsistent.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand.
I think Dal Alexander is very underrated as a position coach.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Chip Long swears by him. To hear Chip Long talk about what Alexander brings to the equation, I would put him at the top of that second pack.
And Alexander is sort of like the guy we know least on the staff, right?
True. Yeah. I mean, he's affable. I mean, he's
a
guy.
He seems like a nice guy. Yeah, I mean, I know him a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, it's like when we have a question about the passing game, we ask the offensive coordinator, not the receivers coach.
No doubt. No doubt. Last question is from @DylanLE_. This year, Notre Dame plays 7 teams coming off idle weeks. And I'm working on the first-rate schedule this week. Is this more difficult to navigate than the crisscross country tour of 2018?
I would say it's less difficult to navigate. I think that the bye weeks, everyone needs to remember it's a double bye week season. So you're probably going to have twice as many teams coming off a bye week before they play you, because you also have 2 bye weeks.
7's awfully extreme.
7 is high, but this was always going to be at least a 5-year. I think the fact that the ACC pretty much has said, like, everyone gets a bye week before Notre Dame, our partial member, is, you know, a bit hilarious.
I mean, it's I don't know if it's totally fair, but I mean, it's fair that you don't, I mean, Notre Dame's not all in the ACC. So.
No, the ACC has no business protecting Notre Dame from anything. You know, Notre Dame is there as a partial member, and they can make their schedule the way, like, doesn't everyone want a bye week before their toughest game? I mean, Notre Dame has a bye week before Michigan, and they have essentially a bye week before Georgia.
They play New Mexico. Georgia. Yeah.
Notre Dame is a lot of teams' toughest game. So you'd want to, if you can work it, so, hey, we want a bye week before our toughest game is Notre Dame. I think for the most part, the ACC is going to be like, sure, no problem. We'll give that to you. So, yeah, it's difficult. But the fact that Notre Dame went from San Diego to Chicago, home, New York, L.A., that, to me, that is way harder than Boston College has a bye week.
I agree. Now, one of the what compounds the bye week situation this year is the first 4 teams you play in November are all coming off their bye week.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, that can be a little bit more significant. You talk, Pete, about Notre Dame being that's the most difficult game on that team's schedule. Well, Virginia Tech plays only one team that won as many as 9 games last year, and that's Notre Dame. Virginia only plays only one team with as many as 9 wins last year, and that's Notre Dame.
Right.
So I'm kind of looking at, I mean, as difficult as, now Notre Dame plays 3 teams that won at least 9 games last year. At Georgia, at Michigan, at Stanford.
And they have essentially a bye week before 2 of them, if we count New Mexico as a bye week.
This is something we've talked about. Somebody asked, would you rearrange the order of the schedule, or how would you rearrange it? We wouldn't.
No, it's in terms of the pacing of it, it's perfect.
It breaks down pretty well. It's just that those three very, very difficult games where Notre Dame has, I mean, they've struggled at Michigan. They've certainly struggled at Stanford. And Georgia hasn't lost a home game in the last 2 years.
And, I mean, it's worth reminding people, what does Michigan have when Notre Dame's on a bye week? They're at Penn State.
They are. So that's tough for that. Stanford, that balances it out with for that
Stanford
game.
Has Cal before Notre Dame, as it always does. I mean, that's a significant game for those two schools. So it's, I think, Notre Dame's toughest games. That's a much more level playing field for the bye weeks.
Yeah. Right, we're going to wrap it up there. I kind of want to tease a story that's going to come in the middle of this week, and I'm just going to leave it at that. It's going to be a story with a name from Notre Dame's past that you might find interesting. I expect it to hit on Wednesday. We'll see how you feel about it. We'll be back next week on Monday, July 29th, for the next edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Thanks for joining us.
It's time to start planning your trip to Notre Dame. Rent Like a Champion is South Bend's largest vacation rental company, with over 1,000 weekend home rentals available close to Notre Dame Stadium. Head to rentlikeachampion.com/illustrated to get $100 off your booking when you use the promo code Irish2019. That's rentlikeachampion.com/illustrated, promo code Irish2019.